It's time for Batter Up, the definitive Atlanta Braves podcast with hosts Joe Patrick and Caleb Johnson, giving you exclusive insight into our Braves from Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Here's Joe and Caleb.
Welcome into the Batter Up podcast on this Tuesday, March 22nd. Caleb Johnson in with my co-host Joe Patrick on a week where we knew there was going to be a lot of news. We knew there was going to be a lot of emotion. And yet it feels like so much has changed, Joe Patrick. Joe, you coming off a bit of a vacation time. How are you feeling there, bud?
Couldn't have timed this one any better. Obviously, I had the vacation scheduled before even the lockout, and so I kind of was out of the loop for one of the most important weeks of free agency and offseason transaction baseball maybe that's ever happened, like for all of this stuff to get crammed into a matter of what, 5 days or a week or however long it was. I was pretty much out of commission, and I told everybody, you know, when I was gone, I was actually going to be, it was stick my head in the sand, quite literally, while I was on vacation, and just like not pay attention to anything from about Wednesday through Saturday. And that's when pretty much everything in baseball happened. The last time that we spoke, Caleb, was when we had just gotten the news that Matt Olson was coming to Atlanta, essentially to replace Freddie Freeman. But we hadn't heard about what was going to happen to Freddie at that point. I think at the time, it was obviously the Dodgers were involved. I think the Yankees were kind of dropping out, but the Rays seemed to have some interest. Of course, he winds up in Los Angeles, and I will just say it was painful to see the pictures and everything. You know, it was, it's just, you know, Dodgers, man, really, like it had to be them, didn't it?
Joe, it's something that we had kind of touched on briefly before we started recording, was that I don't think there had been a more drastic heel turn than what I've seen happen with Freddie Freeman. I mean, a week ago, I was on here, you know, telling you, Joe, like how much I understand the move, that you want to go younger, but man, it's just tough to see your franchise player and Freddie Freeman go to what I assumed was going to be the Dodgers, because there's just something spoke to me about the fact of you got family out there, you live 45 minutes away from the stadium. I just knew that deal was going to get done. And I kept saying, we had heard from Anthopoulos, we had seen the tears of how emotional and how tough a decision this was, but I wanted to hear from Freddie himself to kind of get a full picture understanding, and boy, did we get quite the press conference with Freddie Freeman sitting down in front of the microphone, getting asked about, you know, essentially getting wooed over to the Dodgers, and he's gone full Dodger in that he was very polite when it came to Braves fans. But look, we can just right off the jump, we can hear Freddie himself talk about the fact of what he thought of Alex Anthopoulos doing that press scrum and shedding some tears while doing so.
What'd you make of Anthopoulos' tears? Anthopoulos' tears.
I saw him. Yeah, that's all I'll say.
That's wild. That is, you know, I think that he didn't have to say everything, you know, that for us to receive the message of what he was thinking when he saw Alex Anthopoulos. To me, it seemed perfectly genuine from Alex Anthopoulos at the time. You know, I certainly didn't perceive that press scrum the way that Freddie did, but obviously Freddie has a totally different perspective on how everything went down based on the, you know, the communication that he was having with the Braves, or maybe lack thereof.
Yeah, I think that's an additional part of this, is it's just, it was so strange to see Freddie Freeman, a guy who always takes the high road, who is always so positive, you know, always has that smile kind of thing, and to be asked about it. And I mean, I guess that was his version of taking the high road, but you could see the look on his face of being like, you know, man, that, you know, whatever thoughts were kind of going through his mind. Like, he did not buy that Alex Anthopoulos was truly genuine about losing Freddie. And it seems to be that Freddie thought there was going to be this I don't know, pomp and circumstance, kind of rolling out the red carpet, this big showing from the Braves that never came to fruition. I just assumed that was going to happen, Joe. I just assumed that the Braves were going to end up overpaying for Freddie Freeman, mm-hmm. of what you were going to end up getting in his career. And I was honestly, you'd asked me a week ago or 2 weeks ago, I was fine with that. Look, that happens. You know, I don't think it turns into one of those we talked about, Albert Pujols kind of thing. I didn't think it was going to turn into that, especially with the fact that the DH was coming to the National League. But not only was there not any red carpet rolled out for Freddie Freeman, there was hardly, it seems, any communication, as Freddie pointed out here.
Communication wasn't all there at the in the offseason. I got 2 phone calls all offseason. So I got more from Andrew to my agents in a matter of a couple hours. So I didn't know what was going on. I got one call the day before the lockout of a checking in, and I got one call when the lockout was lifted, just checking in. So I don't know how to interpret that, but that's just the reality of what was going on. So when the Dodgers and other teams expressed interest and wanted to communicate and want to get me here, that was huge for me.
Yeah, and to me, it seems like, from my perspective, and not just my perspective, but just what I'm gathering, having read reports and you know, other people who have been talking about the situation, it seems like Freddie, his agent, did not really do him any favors in this whole situation. And I think that just the way it was handled was, you know, by his agent side, was really kind of playing hardball, you know, to borrow a pun, where the Braves aren't going to play that. You know, Alex Anthopoulos is not going to be kind of, you know, jerked around by a player in negotiations. And I, you know, one of the words I kept on saying about all of this is that it was, you know, a ruthless move by Alex Anthopoulos to go ahead and pull the trigger on the Matt Olson trade and do this whole reshuffle. But I don't say that in a bad way. What I mean by ruthless is just that he's taking the emotion out of the decision as much as he possibly can, because to his point that he made in that press scrum where he was looking emotional about the deal, his job as the general manager of this team is to try to maximize the amount of wins that the Braves are going to get under his, you know, leadership and his guidance. So, you know, I just thought it was really impressive. And Caleb, I wanted to read this quote from Chipper Jones. Did you see this? What he said on
yes,
on he appeared on 680 The Fan. He said, quote, "I do not agree with the way that this was handled on Freddie's side. If you want to play in Atlanta, you play in Atlanta. You maybe take a little less to be happy and play in a place that is comfortable for you. The second that Freddie told me that he rejected the 5 years for $135 million after the All-Star break, I told him, quote, you're playing a very dangerous game. You go out on the free agent market, you get courted by all the pretty girls on the block, chances are you're not going to come back if you take your time waiting on that 6-year deal into January. Atlanta has a job to do." And that's exactly what happened, it seems like. You know, Atlanta wanted to, they locked up Matt Olson on the 8-year deal because by the time he's done with 8 years, he will be 2 years younger than Freddie Freeman will be by the end of this 6-year deal that he has with the Dodgers. So, you know, I just think that Alex Anthopoulos was looking out for the interests of the Braves, and they weren't going to be, you know, I also heard Dave O'Brien talking about, and again, I don't know where this was initially reported because I was out, obviously out of town, but he was saying that Freddie's agent reportedly made an ultimatum to the Braves and gave them like an hour to decide on a deal. Like, that's crazy, and it doesn't surprise me then that Alex Anthopoulos went and did what he did.
Yeah, you talk about, you know, Freddie's agent and his representation and how all that went down. The first thing that I found weird, going back to that soundbite of Freddie talking about, you know, I only received 2 phone calls, was just the fact of what were the Braves really supposed to do? Like, the Braves should have been talking
That's the
to
rules.
Your management. Yeah. The Braves should have been talking to your management, offering up a contract. And if, you know, if you guys like it and you want to try to negotiate, that sort of thing. It was just really strange that it was that of course the Dodgers and of course other teams were going to be the ones calling you and, you know, trying to convince you to change your mind, because everything that Freddie Freeman had been saying for the last 2 years was, I want to be an Atlanta Brave for life. I want to be here. I want to stay in the city. And so it's just kind of like, all right, well, we need to kind of figure out how that's going to get done. And clearly, Freddie's agents kind of, look, they missed the mark. They had too much dip on their chip. And you're right, that was reported about the 1 hour ultimatum, which I'm assuming had to have scrubbed Alex Anthopoulos the wrong way. Absolutely. knowing that he could make this deal for Matt Olson. And that's what I think it came down to. We want to get Freddie's deal done, but we have certain parameters. You guys don't want to follow that? All right, cool. Like, we'll keep it pushing and we'll move on. It's just so strange that now that Freddie is just all of this, you know, essentially, oh, I've been jaded by the Braves and I was done wrong kind of thing. And it was like, no, like, you knew this was going to happen. The one thing I will say about Chipper Jones, spot on with what he had to say, as far as, you know, you're going to get courted by all the pretty girls, and you're definitely going to be enticed to move on. However, Chipper has been playing both sides of this,
yeah,
this offseason. He was on our station earlier saying that, you know, oh, I really think the Braves kind of messed this up by, like, they floated some contracts Freddie's way that, you know, almost seemed disrespectful. And I was like, oh, okay, now Chipper's like, oh, Freddie's not on the Braves anymore, and I need to be in the good graces of,
yeah, yeah,
of Atlanta. Right. All right, you know, let me sing a little bit different tune.
No doubt. So no doubt. Go ahead.
Well, it's just, it's one of those, it's a weird time. I tweeted out something that, because obviously Freddie Freeman's not the only face of the franchise to leave the city within the last week. We just had Matt Ryan with the Falcons get traded away. I never thought I would be sitting here on a day where I was more sad about Matt Ryan leaving Atlanta than I was Freddie Freeman. But I think, and I've even seen some speculation on, and obviously Freddie didn't do this, but it was like, you know, did he do this on his way out to make it easier for us to all move on? You know, like, and it's one of those, I think everything that he did in that press conference kind of made it like, all right, you know what? I'm ready to see you in the NLCS next year, and I'm ready to beat you on way to another World Series.
Yeah, you're totally right. It certainly does make it easier to move on. And we were already, I think, kind of talking, I don't know if convincing ourselves is the exact right way to phrase it, but when we were looking at the, you know, just the bare facts of who Matt Olson is, the terms of his contract, how that compared to what we thought Freddie was going to get at the time, we were thinking, okay, this is actually a pretty good deal for the Braves. Maybe there are some intangible things that you can't replace that will need to be built up in time by other players in the clubhouse and things that you don't have with Freddie leaving. But just from the bare, you know, stats, this is a pretty good deal. I think after seeing all this go down, like you were just saying, Caleb, it makes it almost easier, not even easier to stomach. I think that people are even like more excited now to see Matt Olson play for this team, just because of the way that all went down. I do think that long term, after a year, 5 years, whatever, people will still look back at Freddie Freeman very fondly. I'm sure some are not rubbed the wrong way at all by this, but it I think it certainly does make this whole thing more palatable just to kind of see his frustration with the Braves, I guess you could say. And by the way, I feel like he kind of implied that maybe the Dodgers or other teams were breaking the rules by talking to him between the two calls that he referenced by the Braves. Like, and it's worth noting that Alex Anthopoulos has gotten slapped on the wrist for breaking some of these protocols. And that is why, I don't know if you noticed, he was very conscious not to mention Freddie by name when he had that press scrum, because he's technically not allowed to do that. The players union does not allow general managers to mention other players by name and how it might affect their dealings, because it would ruin, you know, potentially ruin the value. Although it's so stupid because everybody knows exactly what it meant. But I think it's just worth noting that Alex Anthopoulos was very cognizant of that. And I think that, you know, good for the Braves for not breaking any of these rules, but I'm sorry that Freddie felt hurt by the fact that that they weren't breaking the rules to try to talk to him.
Yeah, it is one of those. You're right. Like, fans will get over this. Freddie will get over this. And I think at some point, once his playing career is done, his number will be retired, I would think. I don't expect anyone to ever wear number 5 ever again.
Mm-hmm.
However, it is one of those awkward things of like, well, Dansby Swanson was the one who came out and said no one should ever wear number 5 again. And, well, Joe, can we just move on with another piece of interesting news that came out? I don't know if you saw this while you were gone, but the fact that Carlos Correa's agent reached out to the Braves and was kind of like, hey, you want to make a deal and come get our shortstop? Which could make things could cause things to look very different in the future. Dansby Swanson is also on his final year of his deal before reaching free agency. His agent, same agent as Freddie Freeman, so there is the potential we could be doing the same thing again next year.
And it's worth noting with Correa that I believe I have this right, that he has an opt-out of his contract after 1 year. So he would potentially still be an option if the Braves, you know, don't decide to extend Dansby. I don't know. I personally like Dansby. I hope that he stays. But
sure.
That is interesting that Freddie and Dansby are repped by the same agents. Agents pull a lot of strings in the sports world. I don't think fans really pay enough attention to. Obviously in the soccer world, kind of where I come from, it's huge. It's enormous. And I think in baseball is probably right up there, maybe second most. I think in maybe some other sports, NFL, there's just more hurdles that they can't have as much of an influence. But yeah, when you have these like big free agency periods, they do a lot, and it's about those relationships that GMs have with certain agents and things like that. So that will be something to keep an eye out on. That's good looking by you.
Well, and it is one of those, when it comes to Dansby, I tweeted out after Freddie was traded away, I think Dansby is now the leader of this club. Not the best player on this club,
sure. Yep.
But he will be the leader and the spokesperson. He kind of already did that in the past when the Braves had that issue with fans throwing trash on the field, and he kind of stepped up, and he's always been a vocal guy, but there was Freddie who was over him, who kind of took on more of that leadership role. I think that's now Dansby. So it will be interesting to see how much that gets valued at the end of this year. But as we've seen from Alex Anthopoulos, you got to play well or you're not going to be a part of this team, because he's not interested in just winning the 2021 World Series. He wants to put multiple championships together, and that excites me. That leads us, Joe, into, there's been a lot of transactions since we last talked. We threw that out there. We knew there was going to be some new faces on this team and some faces that we got to experience a world championship with a year ago who are no longer a part of this team. I'll start with the guys who are gone. Obviously, Freddie Freeman leads that list. You know, no more needs to be mentioned about him. I feel like I'm done talking about him until we see him again in the NLCS. a surprise for a lot of fans, Jorge Soler leaves, goes to the Marlins on a 3-year, $36 million deal. Did you expect, after Matt Olson's contract, did you expect Jorge Soler to potentially come back?
So I think I would have expected him to come back if the Braves were going to be able to get a deal more like the short-term one that Eddie Rosario has, where, you know, I think the Braves would have been willing to pay the $12 million a year that Jorge Soler is going to be getting if that were for 1 or 2 years. but almost certainly that if he was getting a one-year deal, they would have wanted something more like Kenley Jansen money, like 1 year, $16 million, something like that. And I think that, you know, it just makes sense in that respect for the Braves to opt for Rosario. And I think the other thing about this, and Alex Anthopoulos really pointed to this when he was being asked questions in the Colin McHugh press conference, which was that, you know, they were really targeting a left-handed bat. And, you know, that's just something where you, when you've got Acuna and Marcelo Zuna in the outfield, and Adam Duvall, you really need a lefty to kind of balance some of that out. Really, when you look at this Braves lineup, I'm trying to think, you've got Olsen obviously hitting from the left side. Ozzie's a switch hitter. Other than that, pretty much everybody else is a right-handed hitter. So I think that they really were looking for that left-handed bat. So for as good as Jorge Soler was in a shortened time with the Braves, I think that, you know, I'm not shocked that they didn't re-sign him on a three-year deal. I kind of never saw that as being a possibility. What about you?
Yeah, with Soler, I was kind of surprised how many fans were shocked that he didn't come back. I never anticipated, I would have been shocked if Soler had come back. Why,
No, it's just very, it's very interesting for me since I was gone and I was not checking in on reactions or anything like this to hear what fans' reactions were to some of these deals. And it's funny that they were funny to me that they were like upset that he didn't come back on that number to the Braves.
Well, it's one of those, I think like the moonshot has just stuck with everyone, you know, seeing that ball fly out in Houston.
Yep.
Everyone fell in love with Jorge Soler in that moment. However, I feel like people forget that Alex Anthopoulos essentially got Jorge Soler for nothing, like absolutely gave him up for a very low minor league pitcher.
Was it that pitcher? I forget his name.
Yeah, the one from the fire
frogs.
The fire frogs. The guy who I think it was high A. Anyways, it was completely like just get him off our books. Essentially, is what Kansas City
wanted to take on the money. Yeah.
Yeah, he had been playing very poorly, but like had a consistent 2 weeks, I remember correctly, before the Braves went and got him. It's more likely that Jorge Soler goes back to the kind of mediocre player, not saying that he's not going to have moments of being great. However, I think Alex Anthopoulos had to have looked at that situation, like you said, Joe, looking at the, you want 3 years? No, I'm not trying to pay guys beyond what I think their talent is going to bring to Atlanta. And so that's a deal where you keep it moving. You let, the Marlins want to do that. Jock Peterson, a guy who had even tweeted out that a potential deal might get done with Atlanta. Yeah. He ends up going to the Giants on a 1 year, $6 million deal. That one was kind of odd. Drew Smyly, good riddance, sir. I'm glad that you found a new team. He gets a 1 year deal, just a little over $5 million goes to the Cubs. Chris Martin gets a 1 year deal, almost $3 million to go to the Cubs.
The Cubs are just adding these guys for the warm bodies, you know, just to like fill out the numbers there in Chicago.
Yeah. And then we kind of touched on it a little bit. Eddie Rosario comes back 2 years, $18 million. Colin McHugh, a reliever who's going to come on a 2 year, $10 million deal.
An amazing deal to get Colin McHugh on that number. That's the pull that the Braves have with so many players, maybe Matt Olson as well. But, you know, for local guys who have grown up Braves fans who want to come in, especially later in their careers, like Colin McHugh, settle down. I mean, that's a pretty much a steal for the Braves to get him in on that number. He also follows me on Twitter. Because he's a big Atlanta United fan, and I cover the team, that's kind of fun.
Yeah,
maybe we can get him on.
Yeah, absolutely. We should definitely try for that. I remember you telling me that he was a big Atlanta United guy. I don't know if he kept up with the team, or if he, like a lot of us, as the struggles have been in the last year or two,
gotten a little distant, and now
everybody's kind of like peering, you know, through the curtain. Is like, oh, can I come back now? Like it looks interesting, you know.
I'm pretty sure he's been like yelling Boca out in my mentions from a couple times. Not too much. He's not crazy, but yeah. And then I'll just pick it up because I kind of threw us off course. You got Kenley Jansen out of nowhere coming in on a 1 year, $16 million deal. I love that move. I did not expect it to happen. I wasn't even thinking it was possible. Love it. It kind of works on multiple levels, obviously, because you got the whole Dodgers aspect again, which this Braves-Dodgers thing could become one of the big rivalries in all of baseball, I think, and which is exciting because I think both these teams are set up for success for a long time. The Dodgers, because they've got money and they're the Dodgers, they'll just continue to be good. And obviously we know that the Braves are kind of in this championship window. So that's a fun aspect to it. But I really think the more I thought about it, to be able to kind of use him and Will Smith in closing roles, you can mix and match those guys in late inning situations, which we'll talk about a little bit later when we go through this pitching staff, which we're going to do today. Love that signing.
So here's an interesting thing, Joe Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
I don't love this move.
Okay.
I think it's the pettiest move that Alex Anthopoulos has done so far this offseason. I'm not saying that I don't think that Kenley Jansen isn't a great pitcher. I do. However, you're getting Jansen on the back end of his career, and you're kind of dealing with a situation where this could be the one signing that does not go Alex Anthopoulos' way. Like, this is, in my opinion, this is the riskiest move he's made all offseason. It's one of those, like my hottest take is, if there's anything that's going to go wrong with all of the guys who have been signed, it's going to be Kenley Jansen. They've already had the conversation before they signed him. They called Will Smith and was like, hey, are you cool with Jansen taking over the closing role? Will Smith said, if it gets me another ring, absolutely. Which I love seeing that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we kind of forget about, in those matchups with the Braves and the Dodgers, Jansen's had quite a few blown saves, in all of that, where the big moment sometimes is a little bit too big for him. And I want to, it's one of those, like, what I want to emphasize, I don't think this is going to, like, necessarily blow up in Alex Anthopoulos' face. I'm not looking at this sort of like a Cole Hamels thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But this is definitely more on the side of a Drew Smyly, where you overspent more than you really needed to for another reliever. Got a position that you didn't have to go get, but it's fine. And yeah, I think there is there's high risk, but also high reward in that move.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, Kenley Jansen, if you look at his kind of top line numbers from last year, they all still look pretty good. But the one that I would call out is he really struggled with the command last year. Really, for the first time in his career, he walked 36 batters in 36 batters in 69 innings. I mean, that is not good at all. And one thing we know about Brian Snicker is he absolutely hates his relievers walking guys for understandable reasons. And, you know, it's funny because Alex Anthopoulos pointed to Colin McHugh as like the opposite of saying, like, you know, we love him because we know he throws strikes. That's kind of what he's kind of built his career on. So that is definitely something to watch out for. I would just say you're right that it is kind of a high risk, high reward type of play. Maybe even the reward isn't super high because you already have a pretty nice bullpen there. But the reason I like it, one, it's a 1-year deal, so it's not going to hurt you long term if it doesn't work out. The other thing is, I do trust Alex Anthopoulos completely, like, making these moves. He has just been fantastic for the last few years in being able to identify, especially relievers that have been able to come in and really help this team out. Of course, in 2019, he went out and got a trio of guys that really helped. I was trying to remember this when I was on the air the other day. It was Chris Martin. And then like two other guys that he picked up.
Mark Melanson.
That's right. Yeah. And there was one other one.
I was about to say
that didn't stick around either, but performed well.
I see his face.
Oh, Shane Green. Shane Green.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I'll give Alex Anthopoulos the benefit of the doubt here. And then, also one thing to remember is that, you know, it's not like Will Smith was super dominant last year either. And I wonder, I'm just kind of spitballing here. I wonder if maybe being able to kind of have like the, like essentially a two closer system. I don't know if that's going to be the system they use, but like if they do have two, if that maybe reduces stress on one of them to like feel like they've got the job that they need to hold down I don't know. I don't know exactly how they're going to work it out, because Brian Snicker is definitely a more traditional type in terms of wanting the one guy that he's going to go to in the ninth inning every time. But when I just see this, when I see like you've got essentially two closers in Will Smith and Kelly Jansen, one's a lefty, one's a righty, it seems to me like you can do a lot more mixing, matching, getting better, getting the matchups that you want in that ninth inning, just depending on who's coming up, and you go to whichever reliever you want to go to. But that'll definitely be something to watch out for as the season progresses, to see how that situation is managed. But you're right. If it blows up, if it blows up in their face, and that is definitely a lot of money on this year's payroll that could have gone obviously elsewhere to improve the team.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those. It's a situation where if we're looking back on the offseason during the season and there are any struggles offensively, you will point to this signing as being like, did you really need to give you know, a reliever $16 million when you could have spent that money? I that is my only thing about it.
Like, especially with the DH coming in, like, you know, you knew that you were going to be needing an extra hitter essentially on the roster to provide value for you. So no, I think it's very fair and something that we shouldn't judge as, I mean, you can't really judge any free agent acquisitions at, you know, at this stage before they've played games as being a good or a bad signing. But I definitely think that, you know, his performance will be very crucial for the Braves in terms of getting the maximum amount of maximum out of this roster.
Following Kenley Jansen's deal up is a position that the Braves probably could have added to even more. And one of the options they chose, they went cheap. They took a flyer on outfielder Alex Dickerson. He's on a one-year, $1 million deal. He was designated for assignment back in November from the Giants. You know, just kind of taking a chance on a guy, another body that you need. I think, Joe, you were one who said before we got recording that maybe this is like more of a Matt Joyce kind of situation. Guy close to the end of his career. And then another reliever, Alex Anthopoulos, is just kind of taking a flyer on just to see what he might be able to get, is Tyler Thornburg, who is on a one-year $900,000 non-guaranteed deal, which is like that's 200 grand higher than the league minimum. He's 33 years old, and he was recovering from Tommy John surgery last year. Have no idea if he even makes it out of camp, but just another deal and the long list of deals that Alex Anthopoulos had made in the last week, that fills out this roster that we hope is another World Series roster.
Yeah, and it's worth noting on Dickerson that he's, again, another left-handed bat, which just gives, you know, I think that's smart to go after another one there. And he hits righties well. I mean, he's got an 810 career OPS against righties. 36 of his 39 career homers are against righties. So, yeah, like a solid kind of, low stakes guy that will be the, hopefully, you know, just be like a bench bat, kind of on the end of the bench, play Sunday day games.
Absolutely. Now, Joe, there is, like, we want to start doing some deep dives every week as we enter the season and then even throughout the season, just as we kind of see stuff flesh out. This week you wanted us to kind of focus on the pitching staff, which feels like has seen some changes. And then at the same time, you got old reliables coming back, from a World Series winning roster that, like I said, you hope to be able to do this all over again. Any that you kind of want to point out as we get close to the season to start?
Well, yeah, you know, it was fun, kind of funny because I was listening to another podcast, and Waskar Yanoa's name was mentioned. I was like, you know, one of the starters for this team, a guy who was definitely going to be in the rotation. I was like, oh, yeah, shit, I forgot about Waskar Yanoa. So definitely need to freshen up on this. You know, it's interesting, though, because I think a lot of people, myself included, thought that this team was definitely going to go in for a veteran starter in free agency, which they didn't end up doing. And that's been Alex Anthopoulos has done that routinely since he's been here with the Braves, going after that veteran starter. Obviously, Charlie Morton worked out fantastically last year to the point where they gave him that contract extension midway through last year. But this is what is really kind of stands out to me overall with this staff is that it's kind of like, all right, it's time for Kyle Wright, Touki Toussaint, like these guys who have been kind of here and there around the starting rotation for a couple of years now to really kind of solidify themselves as starters for this team. And that's exciting. You know, another guy that has kind of gone under the radar is Kyle Wright, because he wasn't really involved with the team as much down the stretch of last season. He was not on the playoff rosters for either the division series or the championship series, but he was added. I don't know if you remember this. I was just reading about it. I think it was Rosenthal. Somebody wrote, one of the Athletic writers, I believe, wrote about this morning, that Kyle Wright, you know, had played a big role in the World Series for the Braves, coming in as the piggyback off of Dylan Lee in game two, where he struck out the side and then came in and pitched like four plus innings in game four. That was huge that the Braves won. So I think that hopefully he can take that in to this year. The whole thing with him has always just been the consistency and the confidence. You know, it's just, he seems to lose it. So, and then he gets in his own head and all that stuff. But just talent wise, I love this rotation. I mean, it's an extremely talented rotation. When you look at Fried, Morton, Anderson, you know what you're getting from them. And then, you know, the stuff that, you know, Wright and Toussaint have, everybody knows it, but it's just a matter of, can they get that stuff on a consistent basis?
Yeah, it was actually interesting, Joe, when you put the list together of what you kind of project to be as rotation. I was surprised with myself that you and I see this rotation pretty different when it comes to that back half. Mm. I think the ones that are currently solidified, you know, obviously Max Fried at the top. Charlie Morton is not going to be the number two for a while.
Yeah.
You know, he still got to recover from
the broken leg took off the leg in the World Series. He threw a simulated game yesterday, which was Monday, March 21st. So that's a good sign. Got through that pain free, all that stuff. But it does seem like he'll be behind a little bit on his buildup.
Yeah, I mean, I would probably say May. You know, I don't know, maybe earlier than that, but
yeah, I'm sure we'll get a firmer timeline on him. But it's definitely worth, you know, yeah, he'll probably miss, yeah, maybe a couple starts or something like that, or not go as long in the first few starts.
Sure. So like I said, Max Fried at the top, Charlie Morton's not going to be there in two, so I would assume Ian Anderson slides up. Waskar Inoa, we think, is going to be there to kind of take back that starting role that he lost because he punched a wall and broke his hand. However, I don't know if Snit wants to move him back to the bullpen. Like, I don't know what's going to end up happening with him. But sure, we'll say for the moment he's a lock. You have Kyle Wright in there. I think Kyle Wright's going to get another shot, but this is going to be the final shot that Kyle Wright gets. Just for the fact of he went pretty much the entire season without being a part of this rotation. As you pointed out, brought him in for the World Series, and he was extremely pivotal in what they were able to do. I don't know that Touki Toussaint gets a shot at starting this rotation again. I think he's going to be a bullpen guy and a relatively low bullpen guy, a guy who throughout the season is going to eat up innings for you. The other two that you've got on here are Kyle Muller and Tucker Davidson. I think Tucker Davidson, at least in my opinion, is a lock to be a part of this rotation.
Mm.
I'm not so convinced with Kyle Muller, but I could end up being very wrong on that. There is a dark horse that I think is going to come out of nowhere. He was a guy that we got all excited heading into the playoffs and then got a little bit of an opportunity, looked incredible, throws extremely fast, and I think all of a sudden we're going to start talking about Spencer Strider.
Mm.
He is a guy who flew up the Braves minor league system. I mean, literally went through every, made every stop in a year. A guy who the Braves are really high on just for the fact of this guy can throw, you know, triple digits.
Yeah.
And whenever a guy can do that, he gets your attention. I think the Braves might treat him as a how the Dodgers did Gratterall. And Gratterall was a guy who throws really fast, who could start, but they also might use him in some relief positions. But he's a guy that if there's going to be anyone who kind of comes out of nowhere and takes over getting a starting opportunity, I think Dylan Lee is another one who's going to get floated out there. That's why I'm lower on Tukey. I'm honestly lower on Kyle Wright, although I think he'll get an opportunity. But the fact that the Braves have all of this young talent who showed promise at the end of last year, I just wonder if those guys are going to get those opportunities moreover than the same guys that if it feels like have been trotted out there the last couple of years going, maybe something will happen this year. The one thing I will say is it leads to an opportunity come summer when the Braves are looking to make some deals, make some trades, whatever be the case, that you'll kind of know what you have by that point. So that, you know, I don't expect all these guys to stay within the Braves organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One thing to mention on a few of these guys. So Kyle Wright, Tukey Toussaint, Tucker Davidson, those three guys only have one option left. So this will be their last option year. And the Braves won't want to use that option because they become a lot less tradable when they have no options remaining. Go ahead.
I was about to say, and they part of the new CBA is guys can only be sent up or sent down 5 times in a season.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of impacts how the Braves will want to go about. I hadn't thought about the fact of those guys having options. That really puts the pressure on. I'm thinking a guy like Kyle Wright, because if you were to tell me tomorrow Tukey Toussaint's going to start the season off in Gwinnett, I wouldn't be that surprised.
I wouldn't either.
Just honestly.
I wouldn't either.
But so you said Kyle Wright, Tukey Toussaint, and who else?
Tucker Davidson, which was surprising to me. I wouldn't Tucker have thought Davidson. He only would only have one option left, but he does.
Interesting.
So Braves going to have to manage that situation pretty carefully with those players. And I agree, like, they're not going to want to, bring them up. They're just going to want to manage that carefully. And I'm honestly kind of surprised they've gotten into this situation where all three of those guys are in this situation, vying for rotation slots with only that one option year left, that they wouldn't have maybe tried to use one to trade to bring in a more veteran starter. And I do wonder if they still might use one of those players to trade for a more bona fide starter at some point this season. But that's worth noting. Honestly, when I was putting together this list, I wasn't really, I was just kind of, it was kind of top of the head. Honestly, I'm sure with you on Tucker Davidson. I probably like Tucker Davidson more right now than Mueller or Tukey. And probably Wright too. I don't know. It's going to be, I think, healthy competition for those guys in the spring training to try to earn those spots. But I really like Tucker's. It's very kind of like I don't know. But like when a reporter's like, I love the way he talks, like, to media, it can sound like, well, okay, whatever.
No, but
he really does, like, have like a genuine, yeah.
He looks, he sounds, he throws like a major league baseball pitcher.
Yeah.
And I think there is something to that. I know what you're talking about. The intangibles with Tucker Davidson just kind of give you that. I think he's going to stick around. It's the same thing that we got out of Ian Anderson. Like, Ian Anderson kind of got thrown in there, and you saw him and you heard from him and you went,
that's a
guy that I can trust. That's a guy that I feel like I can depend on.
And something I remember from Tucker Davidson is, like, you know, it's good to hear from a young pitcher when they come out of a start, whether it was good or bad. Honestly, typically almost better when it's bad, when they have a bad start, and they're able to identify and explain why they were bad. instead of, like, you know, guys are just like, I couldn't throw it over the plate or whatever. You know, it's like,
Wasn't my night. Just wasn't my night.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So it's good to hear from a young player to be able to, you know, understand what was happening mechanically that may have caused them issues in a given moment or something like that. And again, same with Kyle Wright. Kyle Wright's kind of the opposite, where he gets so frustrated, he's just like, I don't know. And he's just like pressing in post game. It's like, I wish there was, like, you could talk about this in a more technical and calm mannered way. Like, sure. We've heard from guys like Ian Anderson. So, and Tucker just seems just really chill, chill dude.
Yeah. I like him.
So good in the clubhouse, things like really, that.
Yeah. He's really active on TikTok and yeah. I'm just going to be honest. Like I like his TikTok.
Yeah.
He makes me laugh and I just think he just kind of fits in. And sometimes those sorts of things are important and they matter when it comes to a clubhouse and it comes to a pitching staff.
It truly does.
Versus a guy who maybe doesn't fit in.
There was a video that Tucker did one time where he was like going into training at his minor league. I forget what team he was with at the time. And he like stopped by. And he's like, I'm going to surprise him with Dunkin' Donuts. And he like swung by and got donuts for everybody when he walked in. Like that's like little stuff, but like it actually matters. And I think it speaks a lot to the person that they're just thinking of their teammates and colleagues in that kind of way. So anyway, you got some news
or
something?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's some news that came down from the Braves. No trades or anything like that. This is just signing their own guys. The Braves today have agreed to non-guaranteed contracts with Sean Newcomb. That's going to be a $900,000 deal. With AJ Minter, a $2.2 million deal. And with Tyler Matzek on a $1.4 million deal. So those guys have non-guaranteed contracts for the upcoming season. I guess I'm kind of surprised that Matzek didn't get more of a...
Yeah,
surefire, more of a long-term thing, but...
Well, that's a nice segue for us into the bullpen. I mean, let's just start talking about this bullpen. All three of those guys are, you know, you would expect them to be part of it. I kind of delineated this into a few sections. So I've got it. go ahead.
I was just going to say, I was scrolling down your list of everyone who's in the bullpen, and I feel like I just like exhaled. I was like, oh, like this... There's a lot of names. There are a lot of names who are going to be, and it's interesting because I feel like in years past, there was always like, you were including guys that you really didn't feel comfortable with that you were just like, well, I mean, the Braves need a body.
Right, exactly.
And now that the Braves are at a point where they literally, there's going to be some names that we've probably gotten used to hearing every year that are going to be spending more time in Gwinnett than they will in Atlanta.
Sure. And this is not really us like trying to do any predictions of what the opening day roster or anything is going to be. It's kind of hard to do that at this point in time. But I just generally have this kind of segmented into a few sections. So kind of at the back, you've got Will Smith and Kenley Jansen. We just know that those guys are going to be either an 8-9 guy or... splitting time between the nines, but those guys are going to be at the very back end. So you've got those two. Then I've got the next section of four, which are kind of the setup guys. So you've got the left-handers in Tyler Matzek and AJ Minter, and then right-handers in Colin McHugh and Luke Jackson. And I got to say, just having six guys like that, adding those four to the Will Smith and Kenley Jansen, that is such a solid core of six. And we saw how important this bullpen was for the team in the last postseason. But really, the bullpen has been a core component of the success that the Braves have had going all the way back to that trade deadline that I mentioned in 2019 when Alex Anthopoulos beefed up that bullpen with those three guys. Ever since then, they've really been relied on quite a bit. And they've come through. And I think you got to have so much faith in that group of six to be a really solid core for you. And maybe they even take some of the pressure off some of these younger starters that we were talking about earlier, with them knowing that they've got a solid group behind them that can come in. Anything stand out to you among this group?
I think it's just like where baseball is headed to where you're going to have to put more emphasis on your bullpen. It's not so much that you can, you're just not going to consistently rely on a guy to throw seven or eight innings. It's going to be closer to four or five.
Yep.
And then you're going to turn to your bullpen. That's why when I said earlier, being somewhat critical of Kenley Jansen, is that an area where it feels like you don't really need a guy. But I will tell you, if he pitches well and, you know, this team gets into August, you're going to be looking back going like, man, what another genius move from Alex Anthopoulos to have, you're right, to have six guys that you can consistently count on. And that's on top of having other guys who have their moments of looking good, or who can just carry you through those summer days of Major League Baseball. Nothing particularly like stands out. I'm curious to see after. I mean, Tyler Matzek had as great a postseason yeah. as you can have. As far as, you know, not just only like his personal brand, but just his actual performance out there.
Brand.
And so, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, true. Like yeah, yeah. Everyone's kind of got a, yeah, everyone's got a pretty consistent joke, especially when it comes to Matzek. I've got the lock screen on my phone has can depend on.
And something I remember from Tucker Davidson is like, you know, it's good to hear from a young pitcher when they come out of a start, whether it was good or bad. Honestly, typically almost better when it's bad, when they have a bad start and they're able to identify and explain why they were bad, instead of like, you know, guys yeah. are just like, I couldn't throw it over the plate or whatever. You know, it's like,
wasn't my night.
So it's good to hear from a young player to be able to, you know, understand what was happening mechanically that may have caused them issues in a given moment or something like that. And again, same with Kyle Wright. Kyle Wright's kind of the opposite, where he gets so frustrated, he's just like, I don't know. And he's just like pressing in post game. It's like, I wish there was like, you could talk about this in a more technical and calm mannered way, like sure. we've heard from guys like Ian Anderson. So, and Tucker just seems just really chill, chill dude.
Yeah. I like him.
So good in the clubhouse, things like
really,
that.
Yeah, he's really active on TikTok. And yeah. I'm just going to be honest. Like, I like his TikTok.
Yeah.
He makes me laugh. And I just think he just kind of fits in. And sometimes those sorts of things are important and they matter when it comes to a clubhouse and it comes to a pitching staff.
It truly does.
Versus a guy who maybe doesn't fit in.
There was a video that Tucker did one time where he was like going into training at his minor league. I forget what team he was with at the time. And he like stopped by. And he's like, I'm going to surprise him with Dunkin' Donuts. And he like swung by and got donuts for everybody when he walked in. Like that's like little stuff, but like it actually matters. And I think it speaks a lot to the person that they're just thinking of their teammates and colleagues in that kind of way. So anyway, you got some news
absolutely.
Or something?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's some news that came down from the Braves. No trades or anything like that. This is just signing their own guys. The Braves today have agreed to non-guaranteed contracts with Sean Newcomb. That's going to be a $900,000 deal. With AJ Minter, a $2.2 million deal. And with Tyler Matzek on a $1.4 million deal. So those guys have non-guaranteed contracts for the upcoming season. I guess I'm kind of surprised that Matzek didn't get more of a...
Yeah.
Surefire, more of a long-term thing, but...
Well, that's a nice segue for us into the bullpen. I mean, let's just start talking about this yeah. bullpen. All three of those guys are, you know, you would expect them to be part of it. I kind of delineated this into a few sections. So I've got it. So go ahead.
I was just going to say, I was scrolling down your list of everyone who's in the bullpen, and I feel like I just like exhaled. I was like, oh, like there's... There's a lot of names.
A lot of names. Like,
there are a lot of names who are going to be, and it's interesting because I feel like in years past there was always like you were including guys that you really didn't feel comfortable with that you were just like, well, I mean the Braves need a body,
right? Exactly.
And now that the Braves are at a point where they literally there's going to be some names that we've probably gotten used to hearing every year that are going to be spending more time in Gwinnett than they will in Atlanta.
Sure. And this is not really us like trying to do any predictions of what the opening day roster or anything is going to be. It's kind of hard to do that at this point in time, but I just generally have this kind of segmented into a few sections. So kind of at the back, you've got Will Smith and Kenley Jansen. We just know that those guys are going to be either an 8-9 guy or might, you know, or you know, splitting time between the nines, but those guys are going to be at the very at back end. So you've got those two. Then I've got the next section of four, which are kind of the setup guys. So you've got the left-handers in Tyler Matzik and AJ Minter, and then right-handers in Colin McHugh and Luke Jackson. And I got to say, just having six guys like that, adding those four to the Will Smith and Kenley Jansen, that is such a solid core of six. And yeah, we saw how important this bullpen was for the team in the last postseason. But really, the bullpen has been a core component of the success that the Braves have had going all the way back to that trade deadline that I mentioned in 2019 when Alex Anthopoulos beefed up that bullpen with those three guys. Ever since then, they've really been relied on quite a bit, and they've come through. And I think you got to have so much faith in that group of six to be a really solid core for you. And maybe they even take some of the pressure off some of these younger starters that we were talking about earlier, with them knowing that they've got a solid group behind them that can come in. Anything stand out to you among this group?
I think it's just like just where baseball is headed, to where you're going to have to put more emphasis on your bullpen. It's not so much that you can, you're just not going to consistently rely on a guy to throw seven or eight innings. It's going to be closer to four or five, and then you're going to turn to your bullpen. That's why when I said earlier, being somewhat critical of Kenley Jansen, is that an area where it feels like you don't really need a guy, but I will tell you, if he pitches well, and this team gets into August, you're going to be looking back going like, man, what another genius move from Alex Anthopoulos to have, you're right, to have six guys that you can consistently count on, and that's on top of having other guys who have their moments of looking good, or who can just carry you through those summer days of Major League Baseball. Nothing particularly like stands out. I'm curious to see after. I mean, Tyler Matzik had about as great a postseason as you can have. As far as not just only like his personal brand, but just his actual performance out there.
Brand.
And so, everyone's kind of got everyone's got a pretty consistent joke, especially when it comes to Matzik. The lock screen on my phone has two walnuts in the corner of the World Series trophy, and that is related to Tyler Matzik. I'm very curious to see if he can keep that same level, because obviously it was like they caught lightning in a bottle with what they got out of him, and everyone knows his story now. So I'm very curious to look out for him, and I'm also like Luke Jackson. He's the other one who we've gone years now of going, oh, this guy's terrible. Oh no, this guy's really surprising us. He's really good.
And he'll probably do both. He'll do both those things again this year, I'm sure. He has his ebbs and flows, no doubt.
Yeah, it just makes me. He's a guy along with Tyler Matzik who I go, out of this core six, I guess you could call it. Those are the two guys who could be replaced if they don't perform well by some of these other names. I don't necessarily think that will happen. But those are the most likely that if anything were to change, I think it comes out of those two names.
Yeah.
I guess go ahead and go through the rest of the guys that kind of round this thing out.
So the last couple that I would have just kind of before you get to the cutoff where you're looking at guys who are kind of on the bubble, I guess these guys would technically kind of be on the bubble too. But the first two I've got in the Braves bullpen right now is Sean Newcomb, who you just mentioned getting that non-guaranteed contract, and Darren O'Day, who is currently on a minor league deal. But Alex Anthopoulos did speak about O'Day during one of his recent media availabilities, and he spoke about him in high terms, saying that like we're really kind of hoping to count on him this year. And he said he's got to make the team and all that. But it sounded to me like as long as he pitches decent this spring, he is going to be a part of this group, at least to start the season. So those are the two that I've got in. But then there's obviously kind of a cluster of guys who have major league experience who will be, you know, biting at their heels trying to get into that group. Left-hander Dylan Lee, who we saw in the World Series last year as an opener, didn't go well for him. The reason I didn't put him in with the starters is because in his post-game press conference that night, he went in, and I think after the first question, it was like, you know, what'd you learn about yourself tonight or your start tonight or whatever, and he was like, that I'm not a starter. which was funny. It was like kudos to the guy in such a big moment like that to be able to make a joke at his own expense. But they did win that game. Or did they win? I don't remember if they did. I think they did. Anyway, so you've got Dylan Lee, lefty, and then Jacob Webb, righty, and Spencer Strider, who I also threw down here as a right-hander. Although I'm sure Strider is still he's so young, he could still go one of two ways, but obviously a very talented arm, like you were talking about earlier. I would expect Jacob Webb would probably be like the top of the line of guys who would be ready to go to the majors just because he has that experience. But obviously kind of struggled last year, and was it Conforto? No, it was Pilar, I think.
No, Kevin Pilar.
Hit him in the face. Yeah.
And Kevin Pilar just got a minor league deal with a team.
Saw that.
Earlier today. I can't remember who it was, but yeah, I remember seeing his name come across. And his name always kind of sticks out to me because of that moment. You're right that Jacob Webb is at a very pivotal moment in his career. I think he is another guy of, you know, you want to put a name of a guy who is on the bubble of, you're either going to be a regular part of this rotation or you are not going to be a part of this team anymore. I think that is how drastic
exactly
his odds are right now. There is no happy medium. We'll wait around. We'll see what we maybe see.
That's
no,
right.
It is a, you've got to come out of the gate strong or pack your bags, mm-hmm. sort of thing. I think that's what we get out of Jacob Webb.
But what's interesting about this group is that I don't see like a natural successor to Josh Tomlin, which maybe he's not exactly the kind of person you would say you like want to have a successor for. But in all seriousness, it's just like, you know, who's going to be the long reliever? Who's going to be that guy who's in the bullpen? Who's honestly, you need somebody in there who can just chew up innings sometimes when you need, whether it's you're getting blown out or you've kind of blown you know, team's doors wide open and you just kind of need somebody to eat up some innings. I wonder who that guy might be, because I don't see a natural guy there who would succeed him in that respect.
I'll tell you my picks.
Who's that?
I think there's two guys who could compete for that type of role. Tuki Toussaint,
yep.
Sean Newcomb.
Yep. Yep.
I think those are the two names. I could be wrong. It could end up someone could emerge.
It's almost crazy
to take on.
It's crazy to remember that Sean Newcomb was once thought of as a starter. He was once like a starting pitcher.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I mean, Tukey, I think, definitely could be that guy. And I tend to think that the Braves will start with a 6-man rotation to start the year. So that might afford a guy like Tukey a position on the team where he can start the season as the sixth reliever. And then maybe transition into a bullpen role, being that long man that the team would need. It's just not the kind of role where I imagine a lot of young players want to be pitching in, you know, because you're kind of pitching in not very consequential moments of games. So and your numbers can really take a hit if you're sucking out there, but like you're not gonna get pulled because you just gotta bite the bullet and get through it. So anyway. And then there's just a couple other young arms just worth keeping an eye on. I don't think these guys will likely play a role, but Bryce Elder was a draft pick, I think, in 2019 or 2020. I can't remember which one. Had a phenomenal year last year, just rocketed up the Braves farm system. So keep an eye on him. Again, I kind of doubt, but maybe he gets something like a Spencer Strider, Dylan Lee type of year where he gets some play maybe towards the end. And then Victor Vodnik is another guy who's had a lot of talk about him for a long time. Another hard thrower. Both those guys are right-handers, and Bryce Elder has just been striking out a ton of guys in the minor league. So some optimistic guys to keep an eye out for, but very doubtful that they would play a role for the team on the major league this year. Neither of them are even on the 40-man roster at this point. So How do you like this, just overall, this pitching staff? What are your, just any general thoughts? I like it. I think there's a ton of talent on this group, both in the rotation and the bullpen. I just think there's a lot of volatility that could happen, you know, just in terms of
guys
under or overperforming could play, have a drastic role, and it could lead Alex Anthopoulos to have to make some big moves at some point during the season to try to get things sorted out.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've just learned in general to never feel too comfortable when it comes to a pitching staff. I mean, shoot, when it comes to a team in general. However, I am a lot more comfortable with the Braves lineup that we will that we'll go into more detail about next week than I am with this pitching staff because of that exact point, Joe, in the fact that this could go really well for the Braves. And, you know, and because guess a name that we never even mentioned.
I think I was gonna
entire time.
I just remembered it. I didn't even put him on because he's been out of my mind. But Mike Soroka,
he's been out of the mind of a lot of people.
Yep.
And that was just as a side note. I was talking with a friend who was asking me, you know, as Freddie Freeman and as Matt Ryan leave the city, you know, who's kind of going to take over that role as the face of the city, and Ronald Acuna immediately came to my mind, and the friend that I was telling this went, "Oh yeah, I forgot about him." And it was like, "Yeah, because the Braves managed to win a World Series without him."
Without him,
Soroka. Yeah, Mike Soroka is another name where if you had asked anyone, you know, if you had told somebody the Braves are going to win the World Series in 2021, and Mike Soroka is not a part of that.
I mean, like, Mike Soroka was like not a favorite, but he was like a outside contender for Cy Young in 2019. I mean, he was that good.
I thought his career was headed in a better direction than Max Fried.
100%. Yeah, it was like Max Fried was kind of like the star. He was like the Robin to Mike Soroka's Batman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Times have changed.
If Soroka can make a complete comeback, though, and get even close to the pitcher that he was, which I hope he can, and I think he can, and if anybody can, it will be him. Man, that would be, talk about this Braves championship window just, you know, becoming that much larger. If you have Soroka, Fried, and Ian Anderson kind of holding down this rotation for a few years, I mean, that would like bring you back like to the 90s, you know, with some of those, you know, the big three that they had back then. So, but with Soroka, I'm just kind of casting him out of my mind for this year. I'm not counting on him. I think he had the re-injury in May of last year. So I'm thinking that it probably takes, if it's normally 12 months and you re-tear the site of the original tear the way he did, I'm thinking probably 18 months before he's back pitching. Safe side. So I don't know. We'll see what happens, but I'm putting my expectations very low for him this year, next year, or maybe even we'll see how his rehab progresses into this year. But, I don't know. We'll see. I sure hope he can get back, 'cause that's brutal.
I know, it's one of those, like, it's just wild that we've gotten to a point where he is a footnote, in everything else going on with this rotation. Like we, you know, mentioned earlier that Charlie Morton is going to have a little bit of a slow start as he comes back from his broken leg. I kept wanting to think that his was an Achilles, and it was like, no. I'm putting that in the wrong Braves pitcher. But so a lot of really talented guys, but as you said, Joe, a lot of opportunity for some volatility. And waiting around for guys to get healthy. There's a lot, I think, to be excited about, and a lot more that we'll be able to get into next week as we go through what this lineup's going to look like, and kind of get ready as we're just 2 weeks away.
We have two more shows before, I mean, not next week, but the following week we'll be on opening day week. You know, it's crazy, man.
Yeah.
It's with the spring training half as long. It's coming so fast.
Yeah. But it excites me because it just means that baseball is back. Regular season baseball is almost here. And we'll have everything covered for you right here on Batter Up. Joe, anything else you want to get to before we get out of here?
Nope, nothing from me. We'll be back with players, position players next week. Talk about the lineup. It's exciting. It's a good lineup.
Yeah, it is. So for everybody listening, thank you. Please like, subscribe, do all of the stuff that makes our bosses very happy and gets us, you know, in the good graces of them. But thanks for listening to Batter Up. For Joe Patrick, I'm Caleb Johnson. Have a good one.